Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You're listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems. Choose your weapon with Doghouse Systems. By Audible. Get your free audiobook and your free trial today. By GoDaddy. Put your website to work while you play. If you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can find more information at gamediplomat.com/donate. Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Happy Hearthstone podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by another guest from the community, Dan Andrews.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
Everyone says they're doing okay. Some are not doing great. They could use a little pick-me-up. Maybe you could do something about that.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, that's nice. All right, so Dan, so I guess I'll start. Dan just sent me an email saying, you know, he heard the message a few episodes back about how I was looking for more Gessos, and Dan had a deck that he wanted to challenge, whatever the reigning deck was. Is that about right, Dan? Who are you? Why are you here?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm working on some things just in the background. I'll get into them later, but a podcast about starting Hearthstone, someone opening it up for the first time, trying to figure out how to even, you know, play it. You know, I thought this would be a great opportunity to introduce myself to your audience and show off the deck that I've been working with the past month or so.
Nice. So how long have you been playing Hearthstone?
I got in about a month after release. So it's been about a year at this point.
Okay, a year. What got you into it? Did you play card games before? Did you just play because it was a Blizzard game? Or what got you?
It was sort of on my radar. I had heard about it, but I hadn't really paid a lot of attention. And then it released. And then I actually saw it on a Giant Bomb stream, I believe. They started playing it for a little bit.
Okay.
And the production value is just, it grabs you. You know, it's such a beautiful game, and it's there are fireworks going off when you win, and, you know, things are exploding all over the place, and you can't not be attracted to it.
And now with Gnomes and Goblins, many more things are exploding all over the place.
Exactly. Dynamite flying everywhere.
So what kind of aspect of the game are you most into? Are you into Constructed or Arena or the PvE stuff? What do you like?
I primarily play Constructed. I took about 2 months off to play Arena, and during that time probably played, I don't know, 2,000 games or something like that over the course of 3 months, maybe.
That is an absurd number, my friend.
I know. It's kind of crazy checking in on the win totals and being like, there's no possible way that I could possibly be playing this much Hearthstone, but, you know, I don't think they're just putting those numbers there to inflate my ego, but I did some rough calculations, and I think it's been about 20 hours a week on average.
Man, you would say you're a hardcore Hearthstone player.
It's pretty brutal, yeah.
All right, so we gotta ask, because we ask everyone, just to give people an idea, what's the highest you've gotten on ladder?
Last season was the first time I really pushed for Legend, and I got halfway up rank 2.
Oh man. Okay, so you got some street cred right there, I'd say. People's ears just perked up. They want to know what you're doing.
Well, you know, actually, up to rank 5, it's like, oh, I could get Legend if I just, you know, put more time into it. But when you start trying to get up there, The psychology of it plays into your games a lot, and it can be really easy to just lose a grip on your play and just slide back down to rank 6, rank 7. So that happened to me 3 or 4 times towards the end of the month, but, you know, it was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah, I have never actually been that high on the ladder, but I feel like it would stress me out immensely.
Ladder anxiety is a real thing. I had a dream about, like, being in the middle of a Hearthstone match and not being able to take my turn or something like that.
Oh, no. The ultimate nightmare.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, when you have the perfect play in hand and you just can't do it.
Right, and everything's green, but you can't click on it. Yep.
All right. Cool. So that is Dan. Let's before we move on to the actual show, Dan, why don't you tell us why you're happy this week?
A couple of reasons, actually. This week I got my Golem Hunter, so
that nice
joins my Shaman on the wall of trophies. And I got 2K ranked wins. So, yeah, milestones, you know, just personal. It's good to hit those markers and then kind of think about how you spend your time in life. You know, it's a good time to reflect when you hit those round 1,000 win numbers.
Reflect on the many hours you have spent in the game. And
exactly.
So does it feel better? Because I actually haven't earned a golden class yet. Does it feel better when you use that hero power?
It depends. I mean, a little bit, I guess. Shaman is especially cool just because all of the totems are individually animated. So, you know, if you can get all four of your totems out, it's definitely intimidating. You're obviously way ahead in the game, and then you have all those, you know, glittery totems out there.
That's true. That is probably one of the better ones, like that one in Paladin, so you can actually see it stay on the board. That is a good point.
Right. I mean, I think it does play a little bit into the psychology of who you're playing against, maybe less so now than it did, you know, 6 months ago. More time has passed.
Yeah.
More people have gotten it. But I think people will expect you to play better.
Yeah, that is true. All right. So before I say my reason I'm happy this week, how do you feel about blasphemy, Dan?
About blasphemy in general?
Yeah.
I'm not opposed.
Okay, good, because I'm about to commit blasphemy here and say that I'm happy this week because of something that happened in Hex, which is like a different online card game that is also awesome. They finally released their Frost Arena, which was their big PvE thing, right? So like Hearthstone has Nexoramus.
Mm-hmm.
Hex finally released kind of their version of that, which they've been talking about for like 2 years. And so it's fun to actually play where it's interesting because it's kind of like Nexoramus, but you actually play through a gauntlet of like 20 different opponents that you have to beat, and you can only use one deck the entire time, and you get as far as you can and then you get rewards based on how far you get. That's been really fun to play this week. Let's talk about some Hearthstone news, because there was some huge Hearthstone news since our last episode. Was there? I don't know. Maybe a little something called Black Rock Mountain.
Yep.
So this is a new Hearthstone adventure that came out. So an adventure is like Nexoramus, where it's more the PvE side of things. Goblins versus Gnomes was an expansion with tons of cards. This is more focused on new encounters and specific fights that you're going to play. Has like a dragon and iron dwarf theme. If you're familiar with Blackrock Mountain in World of Warcraft at all, it's very much like that. There's going to be 5 PvE wings, class challenges, 31 total new cards. Which if it's like the previous adventure, you'll get all of those cards, just earn them by beating the content. You don't have to buy packs or anything like that.
That's right.
What do you think about this? Are you excited?
I'm definitely excited. I think it's interesting that they've been alternating between, you know, the adventure format and then the big release. I think it allows them to kind of gauge the meta and then put in cards that they think are needed. I don't necessarily know that they've hit all the marks so far with what they've shown, but, you know, I'll wait till I see the 26 other cards before I pass judgment. But I think it's interesting that, you know, it lets them take a really measured approach, and then it lets them kind of blast it all out and then see what the community can do with it. So I like this approach.
I do too. From like a game development standpoint, it seems really smart too, because there's a team building the adventures, right? And there's teams trying to balance 123 new cards and a new expansion, which takes time just figuring out the balance of those. So it's cool to get these little bits of content along the way to be like, yep, we're still going to do another giant expansion, but we need a little more time. Here's something while you wait.
And it seemed, if you do the math on the last two releases, 120 and 30 cards seems a little odd. It almost seems like possibly they designed 150 cards and then kind of split them up across two releases. So, you know, maybe it's an opportunity in that sense to really hone their development on the cards and then toss what they think are fun ideas into the adventure mode.
It could be. I don't know, dude, because these are very thematic, where like the Grim Patron and the Hungry Dragon and stuff like that. I don't know how that would have worked in Goblins versus Gnomes. But it is cool. So all 5 wings are going to be $25 if you buy them outright. Or 3,500 gold, which isn't that bad, honestly. 3,500 gold, you can farm that up in not too much time.
I just spent about that much once they showed the pre-order card back. Oh, I said, yeah. Oh, don't need this gold anymore. So yeah, about 3.5 gold went down the drain on card packs.
Worth it. Absolutely. So they revealed 5 cards. We'll put links to all 5 on the show or in the show notes, which will be on gamediplomat.com, and also links to their trailer and the page and stuff. And of course the trailer has a song just like the Goblins versus Gnome ones.
It's absolutely stuck awesome. In my head.
Yeah, I know. They're so good at that. But we wanted to talk about 2 just real fast, because this isn't going to be the bulk of the show. We just want to talk about 2 of the cards real fast. So we each picked kind of our favorite. I picked the Grim Patron, which if you remember the bar in Upper Blackrock Spire.
Blackrock Depths?
Blackrock Depths, that's what it was. Thank you. If you were a rogue, you knew that bar so well, like I was, because you had to farm that forever to get the Barman Shanker, which was the dagger that looked like a broken beer bottle, and it was awesome.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, so you'll remember these guys. They fought you anytime you tried to pick a fight in the bar. But this is a 5-cost creature, 3/3, and it has, whenever this minion survives damage, summon another Grim Patron. Which, as you can imagine, with stuff like Whirlwind, which deals 1 damage to all creatures, is just going to get out of control real fast. It's just going to keep summoning, copying. This is the sort of card that gets me really excited, because I love figuring out those fun combos. Even if they're not 100% efficient, they're fun when they happen. I'm really excited about this card. What do you think, Dan?
I absolutely agree with you. Obviously, it's overcosted for the value, but the effect is just fun. On Reddit did everyone a favor and did the math and worked out that with the Bouncing Blade on turn 8, if your opponent has no minions on board and you cast both of them out, you have about a 40% chance likelihood of having 6 Grim Patrons on the board at the end of that turn.
Which is just outrageous. Like, because then, let's see, how much does Bouncing Blade cost again?
3, so that's 3. A 8-mana 2-card combo.
Yeah, so you're getting 8-mana 2 cards to have 6/3/3 suddenly fill the board. It's like a weird Onyxia.
Right, and it's not even something that, unless they have a really potent board clear, like a Flame Strike or a Quality Consecrate, even if they try and chip out some of your board, there's a good likelihood they'll just spawn more Grim Patrons.
Yeah. All right, what's the card you're excited about?
So, since Shaman's my primary class, I got really excited about Lava Shock. This is a 2-mana spell. Deal 2 damage, unlock your overloaded mana crystals.
This card is just crazy. Crazy! That's like, remove the 1 downside to all of your Shaman cards.
It is pretty crazy. I think if you can get a whole lot of value, meaning maybe up to 6 mana crystals split up over 2 turns, then this is obviously something that's going to win you the game. But you would have to have so many overload cards in your hand over those 2 turns that that's not really likely. I think where you're going to see this a lot is turn 5. This is either going to be turn 5 Lightning Storm Lava Shock or Feral Spirit Lava Shock, because then that just leaves you open to Fire Elemental on turn 6.
Yeah.
Which is a crippling, you know, that any Shaman that has to play an overload on turn 5 is just internally cringing because they can't play their Fire Elemental on curve.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and even if you want just unlock 1 mana crystal, I mean, this card is still great. Then you're dealing 2 damage for 1 mana. That's still a good card.
So a really common combo against a crowded board would be on turn 5 would be to Totem to hope to get spell power. If your Lightning Storm isn't going to have reach to clear the entire board, this makes it so you can Lightning Storm, and then, you know, even if you roll low on run of the creatures, you can use the Lava Shock to finish them off and then unlock your crystals for next turn.
Oh, yeah. I like it. It's going to be a lot of fun to play with. I'm really excited by all the mechanics and stuff. Like we said, we'll have links to all the cards that have been revealed. There's a lot of cool new tricks in there like that. It's not just bigger minions or kind of simple, oh, that now it has taunt. There's a lot of really interesting mechanics in there. All right, but this week, we're not here to talk about new cards. We are here to do battle, sir.
I'm absolutely ready.
You are ready? Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
That is not a fierce battle voice.
I need to put it on, sorry. Let's do it.
There we go. Thank you, Ben Brode. We're good. So
I'll see if I can pull out the laugh later.
So for people that are new to the show or maybe have forgotten, we do these deck battles about once a month. This is where the guest host brings on their favorite deck onto the show and breaks it down for you. They tell you what cards they put into it, how it works, why they keep playing it, help you build it if you want to play it yourself. Then they put their decks to the test and do battle against me in a best of three series live on the show. The twist, of course, is that I always use the current reigning champion deck of the show. That's the last deck a guest host brought onto the show and won with. So the defending champion is Adam's Paladin Tech deck from last month. This will be his first challenger. But if you want full details on this deck, which has been really fun, I crafted actually a lot of cards to build this deck as closely as I could to his. If you want to check out what that deck is, how you can build it, all that good info is on episode 42, which was last month, when it was first introduced. You can find it in the show notes, GameDiplomat.com, of course. This week, like I said, Dan, another challenger from the community. He stepped into the ring with his own personal favorite deck that he thinks can dethrone Adam's Paladin Tech deck. He's put together a full deck list along with substitute cards that you can use if you don't have all of the legendaries or rares or epic cards that he does. That's one thing I really like about that what our guest hosts do is they really provide you options because not all of us have all the cards. So that makes it a lot easier to try out this deck on your own. And actually, so like I mentioned, I couldn't build Adam's deck perfectly, but I actually stumbled across a really cool addition to the deck that kind of swapped for one of his other cards that I'm really excited about. So I think it turned out fun. But all that's on GameDiplomat.com. But let's talk about your deck, Dan, because that's what we're here to talk about and hear about. Before people rush out to start building it, can you tell us kind of what is it?
Sure. So obviously with Goblins vs. Gnomes release, kind of over the past 6 months, Mech Mage has been everywhere. Mage was not really seen as a viable ladder class before that. You know, there was Frost Mage that mostly people, I think, just played because they like to annoy other people.
Sounds about right.
But Mech Mage is an aggro tempo deck that's built around owning the board with sticky mechs in the early game. In the mid game, it plays cost-efficient minions that benefit from the mechs on board, and clearing out the opponent's minions with Fireball or Frostbolt, or, you know, a favorable trade or a Fire Blast, the Mage hero power is fantastic, along with the mechs in this deck to kind of keep your tempo without spending cards. Mm-hmm. There are five cards in the deck that provide spare parts, which also help you curve out your mana spend and keep ahead of your opponent every turn.
Okay, so this is, I think you called it a mid-tempo. So you're trying to win by like turn seven or so? Is that about right? It's fairly aggressive?
Ideally turn five, turn six lethal.
Turn five?
It's happened. It's happened. Turn six lethal is a decent game where you're playing on curve and your opponent just doesn't have a lot of answers. Sometimes it does go to turn 10, but at that point you're not in great shape typically.
Okay, so as someone who's much higher up on the ladder than I am, is this kind of the go-to mage deck up at those super high echelons?
There was a lot of Mirror Entity Mad Scientist mage for a while after Kalento kind of put that out there and said, this is what I think is the most efficient deck. And of course, as soon as you show it to everybody, it becomes a lot less potent.
Yeah.
because everyone starts playing around it. So I think, you know, depending on the meta, that's probably actually the most powerful mech deck. But I honestly just got sick of losing from playing out my secrets that were supposed to, you know, be grabbing me all this tempo. So
yeah.
I switched them out to for some, you know, early game minions to kind of bridge the gap, and then some late game punishers as well.
Okay, cool. So it's got spare parts in the deck, mm-hmm. you mentioned. The last deck that we used actually kind of used nice tricks with that, like with the quartermaster and stuff like that to buff up minions. Is that kind of key to the success here, or how does this deck really win?
So spare parts are useful, obviously, with Archmage Antonidas, because you're going to play out a spare part and get a Fireball. That's a pretty good trade.
Oh, yeah.
Finicky Cloakfield on Antonidas on turn 8 is just, you know, going to set you up to have a great turn 9, because you'll be able to trade your Antonidas any way you want.
So can you remind people what he does?
Mm-hmm. He's a 7 cost minion, 5 attack, 7 health. And his text reads, whenever you cast a spell, I believe it's gain a fireball.
Yeah.
So anytime you play one of those one cost spells, you're going to get a fireball into your hand. And if you use that spare part to make him survive the turn, then you can cast out the fireball next turn to get another fireball in hand.
Yeah, which is just outrageous. I could see that scaling out of control real fast.
Right. As every turn you can keep him on the board, you can do 13 damage just from spells and recycling your cards and one fireball.
Man. So is that pretty much, is that your hope then? Does this deck rely on that guy to win?
It could work with that. It also, I mean, hopefully by turn 7 you've drawn into that, or turn 8 rather, or Dr. Boom. Dr. Boom obviously does a lot of work. He's the most powerful minion in this deck. There's no minion behind him that's stronger. So really, you should be in a good state by the time you play out Dr. Boom, to the point where the Boom bots often just finish me the game from their RNG booms.
Wow. All right. So what are the key cards, right? So you say Archmage Antonidas. So he sounds like a key card. Is Dr. Boom also a key card?
The Dr. Boom is kind of the key card, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, I guess because he brings the mechs, too.
Right, I mean, he's in pretty much every deck. I mean, maybe not Hunter Face, but anything that has a back game, he just has so much value for the cost that with this, with the mechs energy as well, it's just a no-brainer to include him in the deck.
All right, what else you got?
So Goblin Blast Mage is a fantastic card. It was, you know, like I said, before GVG, Mage wasn't really seen as a viable ladder class. And obviously Goblin Blast Mage kind of addressed that.
It's Can you great... remind people what that card is?
Too? Yeah, I'm sorry. That's a 4-cost minion. It's 5 attack, 4 health. And if you have a mech on board, it will deal 4 damage randomly amongst all enemy characters.
Man, so, that card is so obnoxious playing on the other side.
Right, especially if you're playing as a paladin or hunter, something that has, you know, a lot of vulnerable cards out there that you're hoping to do some work before they die. It just clears your entire board and puts you behind.
Yeah. Okay, and then what else you got? What else
so,
is key?
Piloted Shredder is 4 mana cost, 4 attack, 3 health, and it has it's a mech and has Death Rattle, summon a random 2-cost minion. So Pilot Shredder, just like Dr. Boom, that's in a ton of decks as well. I see it in Druid decks, I see it in Warrior decks. It doesn't have to have mech's energy, it just has a ton of value. And the random 2 drop, depending on what you get out of it, can have a huge impact on the game. You know, I've had up to 6 armor off of an armorsmith that gets off that.
I've had
someone pop the piloted shredder because they think they're getting ahead on board and the doomsayer gets out. You know, sometimes it swings the other way and, you know, you clear your own board, but it's always going to be fun. So I think that's why you see it a lot of places too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just one of the cards we talked about a lot last week in our review, that we just really like that because it is fun. It's got great value. And it's kind of cool. One of the reasons I always kind of liked playing Priest was how you can steal cards from the other people's decks, because you feel like you can cross over different class strengths like that. And you kind of mentioned it with like getting the Armorsmith, which is normally a warrior-only card. But you can have that as a mage now, too. It's really fun to get those unique situations.
Or my personal favorite, is Whirling Zap-O-Matic.
Oh.
That's pretty.
Remind me what that one does.
That is 3 attack, 2 health, Wind Fury, mech.
Oh,
so it
yeah.
also has synergy with the deck. And and if they don't have an immediate response to it, because oftentimes, you know, they spent their mana or their damage or their minion trying to knock out the piloted shredder and didn't plan on what to do on the drop, and you can, you know, take 6 damage straight to their face next turn.
Yeah, man, that is scary. All right, so there's one card you haven't said yet that has to be key to this deck, the Mech Warper, right? I see that in every mech mage I've played against.
It's in every mech deck. I mean, if you're going to have a mech tribal deck, then it has to be built around the Mech Warper. Mech Warper is 2 mana minion. It's a mech, obviously. 2 attack, 3 health. And the text reads, minions cost 1 less to play, I believe.
Yep.
And if you have two mech warpers out, that doubles up. This allows for a lot of really aggressive early plays. For instance, turn one, if you're going second, you can coin mech warper and then clockwork gnome. Turn two, you can coin out a mech warper and then an annoyatron to protect it. Turn three is where you're really kind of not involving the coin, and you can play a mech warper and then annoyatron or snow chugger out. Mech warper snow chugger for a melee class is a really difficult decision to make. They need to, you know, spend their tempo on killing one and leaving the other on board. And typically they're going to kill the mech warper, which is the correct decision, but you know, that it then still feels good to have
every
a
turn.
Exactly. It still feels pretty good to have that snow chugger around.
Yeah.
If you can have it survive turn two, that's when it really becomes a threatening to the opponent where the game might be ending, because you're, you know, in a position to drop mechanical Yeti or piloted Shredder on turn three.
Yeah. Oh man. All right. This deck sounds like, I'm going to be frustrated the next time everyone hears from me.
We'll see. Let's see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. But I'm also excited because, this Paladin Tech deck that Adam made is also really strong, so I'm excited to play. That's the deck. As a reminder, I'm playing the Paladin Tech deck built by Adam in episode 42. This is the first challenger it's had to face. Are you ready to do this, Dan?
I'm ready to put this deck in the ground.
All right. So we're going to go play a best of three series right now, which you can watch in its entirety in our show notes on GameDiplomat.com. I'm going to live stream it, so we'll have the video on there in the show notes. And we'll be right back. All right, we are back. We have battled, and a victor has emerged.
How you feeling, Josh?
I'm not feeling victorious.
I'm sorry about that.
Me too, man. I've been on a losing streak. I mean, we've had a lot of turnover on the defending champion decks. I'm wondering, maybe it's me. Maybe it's me, Dan.
I don't know. You played that pretty well, honestly. You had some hard turns go against you there.
Yeah. So let's talk about how it went. How did you feel? How did your deck perform?
I think it performed as it was supposed to. I don't know if I made every decision correctly. The first game in particular, I felt really far behind on cards. I was ahead on life the entire game, but when you're only holding, you know, your two fireballs in hand and one minion, everything kind of feels touch and go.
Yeah. Yeah, the first game, I thought I had you on the rope. So, for the record, it was 2-0. I lost both games. The first game, I was feeling really good. Like you said, because at one point, I think I had five cards in hand. You had two. And I had, like, a guy on the board. Like, I was way ahead. But then it just kind of, it started spiraling out of control. And I just couldn't keep up with how much damage you were throwing down. Those spider tanks, man. They are so hardy.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to draw two early enough to play both of them out. Even with an Aldor Peacekeeper on it, it's still a dude killer. It's pretty efficient at clearing out the recruits.
Yeah, I was hoping, it was probably a bad hope, but I was hoping you were going to let those recruits sit down on the field just for a little bit. Because the first game, I had nothing but recruits. And then the next game, I had nothing but quartermasters, but I never got them to line up right. It was unfortunate.
That's I ran a lot of Paladin as well after GVD launched, and I had that problem as well. You always have one or the other.
Yeah. So playing against your deck, the things that I thought were most powerful, or at least frustrated me the most, I guess, was how quickly you could burn through my taunt guys. And I think that's because you're holding onto the fireballs and stuff like that, but on the second game, I played a Sludge Belcher one turn, and then Arena Master, Arena Lord, the 6/5 taunt, and then another Arena Lord the next turn. Three turns in a row of taunt, and still you were punching me in the face for like 6 or 7 damage all three of those turns. I felt like I couldn't ever slow you down.
Normally, I don't like to have both fireballs in hand. It makes me go, oh, well, hopefully next turn I get a fireball target. Unfortunately, yeah. you gave me two in a row. So, I would say that wouldn't normally be how that deck would be performing. I probably would have to trade into one or both of those Arena Lords, but luckily I could just burst past them and keep hitting your face.
Yeah, because that was kind of my thought. After you did the first one, I was like, okay, that's fine. It's one less fireball to my face. He still did his job. I was like, and I have my second one. There's no way he has both fireballs in hand. And
nobody expects a second fireball in hand.
No one expects it. All right. So do you want to kind of give a quick rundown? Just what was your thought process going through the game? Were you always trying to punch face, or when did you decide when to trade and when to punch face?
When to trade is kind of, I never want to put out more than three minions on board just because it makes for a really attractive board clear. If you're going to use a board clear, I want it to be as mana efficient as possible. So when I kind of take the choice to, in the second game, I know I took some minions out of play sort of mid game. It was kind of just to clean up the board and get your minions off board and kind of protect in case you decide to clear next turn.
Okay. That makes sense. And do you actually, I was curious, do you have an AoE spell in there? Do you have like a board clear spell?
Didn't you see it? It was the Goblin Blast Mage.
Yeah. Okay. I felt that, man. I was feeling so good because actually that turn I did have a Quartermaster in my hand. So I was ready to go next turn. I was like, well, he won't be able to trade all of them, right? At least two or three of them will stand because I think I had four on the board.
You did. You
dropped
had four
down
on
Goblin
board.
Blast Mage. It killed all four of them.
So specifically that turn, I had another Mech Warper in hand. I had two Mech Warpers and the Blast Mage. So that's why I chose to use the Finicky Cloak Field. Normally I hang on to that until I can use it on Antonidas. But in that case, I was like, all right, he's going to stick on board through turn three. Turn four, I'm going to use him to knock out your shielded mini bot. And then let's see how this Blast Mage goes. And because because of how it calculates damage, wiping out four like the way it did is actually quite likely if you have four 1/1s on board, just the way the calculations are determined on a per shot basis.
Oh man, yeah, it was painful. So what's your reasoning behind not also running something like Flame Strike? Is it just that you'd rather have something that you could use to hit the face, like a fireball?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if I was going to run Flame Strike, it would be in addition to the fireballs, but it's one of those things where it's a really powerful card, but it just doesn't fit into the win conditions in the deck. If you're in a position where you need to use Flame Strike, then you're probably not playing out the deck like how it's supposed to be. You saw me, I was picking which minions to trade out of mine and favorably trade against yours. That's kind of what you should be doing as the game progresses and keep chipping away at them. You should never be in a position where you need to just wipe their board.
Okay, so is the idea there then that because you have a lot of cheap minions and you can make your mechs cheaper, that you'll always have bodies on the board so you can do that? Is that why?
Right, exactly. You should always be able to play out something. And at the point where you have no cards left to play out, turn 7, turn 8, you know, you're either in a position where you're going to win or draw into a win, or you're not. So, you know, a Flame Strike doesn't necessarily improve your odds at that point if your opponent is already clearing out your board and you don't have any other minions in hand.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Because I know Flame Strike is one of those cards that kind of when I start making a mage deck, I almost always just put one copy in at the start, just kind of by default. But it's cool to hear kind of other conditions as well. And that's kind of what's most exciting about Mech Mage for me, is because Mage, like, more than any other class, maybe Hunter, I felt was kind of pigeonholed into a role, whereas, like, if you play Mage, you're a control deck. Like, that's really all you could do.
Right.
And Mech Mage totally breaks that. It's really exciting.
The other thing about Flame Strike and other, you know, Blizzard alternatively is when you're facing minion or classes that do have a lot of minions on board, it's typically going to be Hunter and Paladin, and a lot of those minions are going to have one health. So investing 7 mana to do 4 damage to all of them can often be, you know, severe overkill. So this really keeps it on tempo.
Okay, yeah, and it leaves you another fat body on the board to trade with afterwards.
Exactly, to punch face. It's pretty good at that.
Awesome. All right, so how did you feel, like, overall, like, from your best games with that deck and your worst games with that deck? When players go back and watch the live stream of our battle, how good of a representation does that give of the strength of the deck?
I would say that the second game is a pretty average game. Normally I get one Blast Mage out. I was lucky enough to get two Mech Warpers. I did have Dr. Boom, so...
Yeah, and then Time Rewinder. Man.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the spare parts allow you to rethink how you're playing, you know, the minions. It's I can take him off the board, play him again. I essentially drew the best card in the game again because you thought you were eliminating him for the first half of your Sludge Belcher.
Yeah. Yeah, because I had used my Alchemist Keeper on him.
No, Equality. So he was a 7 attack, 1 health.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That was even better. Oh, man. That was disappointing. All right. So any other thoughts on your deck, why people should play it, what you think?
It's one of those decks when you start playing it, every card seems to fall into place. You draw cards into your hand, and you're like, oh, I have an immediate use for this. So I would say it's definitely good for beginner to intermediate players because basically the one thing you have to avoid is unnecessarily trading. Just kind of like, oh, let me just clear their board for no particular reason. You want to keep going to face, but it's just a fun deck to play. You get some fun minions, you get some RNG in there, and you know, you're typically having a good time.
Awesome. Yeah, well, it looked fun, and I've played against it a lot. I've always kind of wanted to build it, but never actually got around to it. But now I guess I have to, so I can it can challenge the next deck that comes on. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see kind of what your reasoning is for all of your cards that you put in there.
I don't know if you've looked at the deck list yet, but
I actually haven't.
It's about 12 pages long, actually.
Awesome.
So I'm
just going to copy paste all that onto the show notes. So
I put a lot of time and effort.
This is crazy. I'm not kidding. This is actually 16 pages long in Google Docs.
So. Dude. You asked me to explain every card in there, so I definitely went in.
You did not let me down. Awesome. So if you were going to build this deck or any type of deck like this, or even if you're just worried about playing against a deck like this, you should definitely read these notes because he has put in in-depth thoughts on every single card in the deck. This is awesome.
I also have a bunch of sideboard cards in there and why you might want to swap them in.
Awesome. Perfect. So that's going to be on GameDiplomat.com. Before we get into other stuff, let's jump into our community section. We have a question from Max on Twitter, who was kind enough to send it right as we started the show. Awesome. Max Redmond. He says, what do you think of Fellreaver in Arena?
I love this question. What do you think?
So, just to remind people real fast, Fellreaver is a 5-cost 8/8. Whenever you're but it's a mech minion. But it says, mm-hmm. Whenever your opponent plays a card, discard the top 3 cards of your deck. So I have very strong opinions on this card. Because I went on an Arena binge last week or the week before. I played a ton of Arena. I got Fellreaver 2 decks in a row. And I took it both times. And every single time it backfired on me. Like, I know when we were talking about this card when it was first announced on the show, we said, like, oh, the discard isn't even that big of a deal. If you don't hit 0, it doesn't matter. And I don't know if I just got unlucky or whatever it was, but I was dropping this guy down, and they were playing, you know, 2-3 cards a turn. And if they don't have anything for you to trade with to kill, I mean, sure, you're dealing damage, but if they throw down, like, a taunt, right, if they're throwing down a Taz Dingo, and you're killing that, and every single turn you're milling 10 cards. I mean, you only have a couple turns to live. I died to the mill several times. So I'm not a big fan. What do you think?
I had one Arena that went very well with 2 of them in there, actually. That was a lot of fun having both out there. So there are a couple of things that I like about it. One, I agree with you that, you know, at the point you can play it out, it's not really useful for trading. And I think that's what's really attractive to some people. They go, oh, I can play an 8/8 on turn 5. What kind of crazy curve play is that? But honestly, at that point in the game, your opponent probably has cards in hand that they can play out. If I would have it, I would play it more on the back end. It's when your opponent's running out of answers and they don't have many more cards to play that you can kind of put this down on the back end of something. The fact that it only costs 5 mana means that you can cast a cost-efficient spell to kind of protect it beforehand or maybe give them card disadvantage. I do see what you're saying, though. It's painful to get cards burned.
Yeah. Then there's like a couple games where like I was playing a mage, I think. I was like, oh, if they polymorph, that fine. If they fireball, that's fine. And then they froze it. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. That's not good at all. And it could very well be, because those were my first two times ever playing with it. I haven't used it in Constructed. I don't own it. So I'm sure I could have played it smarter. And I think that makes a lot of sense to save it till the late game, where it's five cost. The perk is really that you can play this and another card.
Also game. Consider the fact that once you've drawn more cards, so theoretically, let's say you're playing this on turn 12 or something like that, you have fewer cards to burn, and this won't actually send you into fatigue. Well, it will in the sense that you don't have any cards, but it won't cause additional fatigue damage for every card that your opponent plays.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, so that is really good. Yeah, so that is a very good point to make, because if it did that, this could be outrageously bad. But still, every time, especially in Arena, I know I shouldn't feel this way, but every time, like, I had like a legendary or something, I can't remember. It was a card I was really excited about. Every time it just like burn, and you're just like, oh no, what have you done? And then you have no more cards to draw.
I honestly think if you didn't see so much big game hunter in all of, tempo or control decks, the kind of decks that want to really hurt you when you play out a big minion, this actually might see more play. But the big game hunter takedown is just so brutal. You've burned three cards and they're ahead on board all of a sudden.
Yeah, that is very true. Well, maybe if and when Dr. Boom gets nerfed a little bit, maybe we'll see less big game hunter too. This guy can have his day. So there you go. Opinions are mixed, Max. You should try it out. Let us know what you think. Because I'm sure it matters, with your class and strategy and all that sort of stuff too. So try out different combinations. Let us know. All right, iTunes review. Zoran Card of the Week is his username. That's confusing. How is that his name? Either we have identical taste, or he made that account just to comment here. Either way, I like this Zoran guy. He says, great show, 5 stars. He says, make Scott the permanent co-host and have guests battle against his deck of the month. Which is an interesting idea. If Scott was randomly changing his deck, brought a new deck every month.
I would happily challenge Scott.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would. Scott is a fan favorite. I'm really excited. A lot of people have actually talked about trying to get him as a permanent co-host. And, maybe I'll talk with him and see if he'd be interested in that. He's a busy guy. So that's kind of the biggest thing. We haven't always had time in the past. But maybe I'll see with him and see if he wants to kind of be on the show more often and do deck battles. Because Lord knows my wallet could use a break from having to construct these new decks every single week.
I kind of chuckled earlier when you said you craft a lot of cards, because I said I felt real bad when I'm going to feel real bad when I have to beat him and he's going to have to craft, Archmage Antonidas and all that.
It's funny. If you want to have a good laugh at my expense, you should go watch the end of the stream, which will be on Games with Fanatic in the show notes, because the end of it is basically me with my head down just being like, God, thinking about, oh, I have to craft Antonidas. Oh, I have to craft Blast Mage. Oh, I have to craft so many cards. Because you can't.
Craft Antonidas. You're looking at it the wrong way. You get to. You're privileged enough to get Tony on your team.
Okay, sorry. I have to lose the amount of money it takes me to craft Antonidas. How about that? It will be cool to have Antonidas. I do not refute that at all. Man. All right, let's talk about Card of the Week, because it's my favorite part of the show, where Dan gets to sing to us.
Oh, boy, I was hoping you weren't going to remember. But in case you did, my girlfriend was a camp counselor, so I had her come up with something.
Whoa. Is she singing back up there?
No. It's all me and my terrible voice, but okay. It's the Card of the Week, Abomination Cogmaster Rencho. It's the Card of the Week, Loot Hoarder Malorn One I Cheat. All right, she's going to be really happy I did that.
It's good. It had almost like a pirate shanty vibe to it. I was kind of swaying from side to side, pretending I had a grog mug.
Well, at least one person's into it, so I'm glad I could hit you.
I guarantee you more. If you're into that, we'll list how to contact Dan at the end, but you should just send him a note. Let him know, hey, I really dug your song. His girlfriend will be really happy to
yeah,
hear
Yeah, if you're
about
a record producer, feel free to reach out.
Yeah. Okay, don't do that. Don't do that. Let's give a solid job advice. Do not hire Dan to sing pirate shanty jingles.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
All right, so you picked the card of the week. Why don't you go ahead and introduce it?
Sure. I picked the Kazan Mystic because, honestly, I was listening to your GVG deck review or card review a few weeks ago, and you guys kept talking about, slim pickings in the rare creature spot, and I was screaming at the radio, it's the Kazan Mystic. It's fantastic. So currently three of the four decks, first of all, let's actually talk about the stats. It's yeah. four mana creature, four attack, three health. Which is not great, obviously. Battlecry, take control of a random enemy secret. So currently three of the four decks in the Tempo Storm meta report lists as tier one run Mad Scientists and Secrets. So that
basically means the decks that are supposedly very powerful, right?
Exactly. And, okay. you know, obviously... all decks are competitive if you have a deck that has a lot of synergy, and really it's mostly a perception thing, and when they put it out, it actually does a lot to shift the meta. So whether or not Midrange Hunter is actually the most powerful deck in Hearthstone, the fact that they put it out as the most powerful deck in Hearthstone means you're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah.
So because three decks in tier one of their meta report run Secrets, Kazan Mystic can be fantastic. Mostly because those decks kind of depend on those secrets and depend on getting them out unfairly through the Mad Scientist. They didn't have to pay for the secret that they got through the Mad Scientist. You know, they got the body on board, the body did work, and all of a sudden a secret pops out of their deck. They didn't even have to draw the deck, or draw the card, rather. So Kazan Mystic really helps grab that unfair advantage away from them, and... oftentimes their decks don't have the legs to kind of go the distance once you start outplaying them turn four, turn five with these kinds of secret stealing plays.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're not, like, if you're looking at it from a quote unquote card advantage sort of thing, it's better than just drawing a card because you're actually taking effectively a card from them too.
Right, exactly. You're essentially, they spent the mana on the secret, or they, you know, put the spot in their deck and they no longer get that effect and you're getting that effect. So yeah, it's actually quite a dramatic swing.
Yeah, and especially playing against Mage Secrets, a lot of times, because they know what it is, because a lot of times they'll kill the Mad Scientist, get the secret, and then decide what to play. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're playing around that. So they'll throw down their big dude or their most valuable minion because they have duplicate up. And then suddenly when that disappears, like, it's a huge problem in their strategy because that's, like you said, a lot of these decks' secrets is so crucial to what they do.
Well, with Mirror Entity and Mech Mage in particular, the reason why that's such a strong tempo play is you essentially get charge with the minion that your opponent plays. You get initiative with that minion.
Oh, yeah.
So this is taking that away from them. Even Face Hunter you see a lot if they're running Fire... Or explosive traps, rather. That'll knock out pretty much any minion they're going to send charging your way. So they're going to waste a good portion of the turn or have to burn a weapon card just to, you know, pop the explosive trap off your face.
So actually, how does this card interact with Mirror Entity? Do they get a copy or this steals it before that effect happens?
No, it steals it before that effect happens. So you now have a minion on board and you'll get the next minion that they play.
That is dirty.
It is, and, you know, one of the problems with running Mirror Entity in this deck is that it can clog up your hand. It can, you know, you can have a turn where you feel forced to play it because you don't really have a better play and you need to kind of progress the match. And if someone plays a Kazan Mystic against that, you really don't have any options.
Yeah. Okay, so is this a card that you're putting in, like, all of your decks, or only when you happen to play a lot of those decks that night? Because obviously, vanilla-wise, right, if you're playing a deck that doesn't have secrets, this is a bad card.
Right. So if you compare it to the Piloted Shredder, which, you know, everyone agrees is a great card, you're essentially losing the two, you know, the two mana creature on the back end. So in that sense, yes, it's a hit from that, but ultimately you still have a 4/3 body, so When I was running it, I was running it in decks to kind of shore up my weaknesses. I wasn't concerned about my other matchups. I was concerned about aggro mech mage and aggro hunter. So that's why I put in two Kazan Mystics, just because, you know, it did so much work in those matchups that I didn't really mind it, you know, when I drew two of them against a priest, because I could still beat a priest.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so actually, when I saw that you had picked this for the card, and you had told me ahead of time how much you like this card, I took it in a recent arena run. I only played a class with secrets once, and they never played a secret. I was disappointed, because I was ready to come back on the show and be like, you know what? I tried it. You're right. Man, this is an awesome moment. So Constructed is probably a better place for it than Arena, just because Arena, it's so hard to predict. They may not have even been offered a secret, and a lot of times in Arena, people just take the body instead of secrets because you can't really plan cool tricks around it.
I would say the one plus on that end is that Mage is just so prevalent across Arena that, you know, there are going to be secrets out there in the pool. You might not get lucky and find a Mage who picks some, but you're going to come up against Mage decks that definitely have secrets in there.
That's true. So if you're playing against a class that can have secrets, will you hold this in your hand forever if they never play a secret? Or when do you decide to just be, you know what, let's just do the body?
This will be the last minion I play out. It's really when I've run out of all other options and I go, well, I guess they're not running secrets. And typically the turn after that, they play a secret and then say sorry.
At least they say sorry. That's better. Better than thanks.
Yep, pretty much. But, you know, it's something I do hold on against hunters, definitely, just because every hunter deck is running the bow and the secrets. Yeah. You know, you might not know what secret they're running, but they're definitely running something.
Yeah. Okay, so there you have it.
Yep.
We've got some more more opinions to add to our review last week. I love that. Any other parting thoughts on Kazan Mystic before we move on?
No, I would just say, you know, put in your deck when you think you need it. It's kind of one of those cards where it's a meta call. It's not something that, oh, this is just a staple card of this deck, and whenever you play this deck, you should have Kazan Mystic in it. It's kind of, you know, I have played 5 out of my last 7 matches against secret classes, so this makes sense to slot in until I stop seeing those so much.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So if you got them, use them, because now is the time. Especially, like you said, since they just showed up on the Tempo Storm meta report. Like you said, that means a lot more people are going to be trying out those decks soon. So, and as a rare, it's actually not that expensive to craft. It's pretty cheap.
And it does work.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so I think that's the episode. We're going to have full show notes, like we said, along with links to all the new cards in the expansion, our live stream. Obviously, Dan's deck with his essays on why each card is in there and why you should use them and how you should use them. Like I said, even if you don't plan on playing the deck, if you plan on ever playing against it, and it's pretty common, I imagine you will, it's really interesting to hear the reasoning and see what they plan to do so you can plan against it. All that will be on GameDiplomat.com. Swing on there, click on Hearthstone at the top. And as always, we'd love to hear what you thought of the show, what you'd like to see added to the show in future episodes. You can leave iTunes reviews. We'll read 5-star ones on the show if you like it. Otherwise, you can contact or find us on Google+, Happy Hearthstone. We got a whole big community there, everyone talking Hearthstone. You can contact me directly on Twitter, at jaugustine, or via email at ajosh@outlook.com. And you can always, of course, leave a comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Dan, where can people find you and what are you up to? You mentioned a podcast or something earlier, right?
Right. So my girlfriend, Katie, I mentioned her, the camp counselor, songwriter. But she had not played Hearthstone before. She had watched me play approximately 200-300 hours of Hearthstone and kind of sat confused. And with all the conversation about the new player experience, I thought it would be really interesting to kind of get her in for the first time and walk her through a lot of the initial roadblocks that people have when they pick up Hearthstone. Yeah. Because, you know, the tutorial leaves off and it's kind of like, all right, well, you have Mage now. Good luck. and hope you can figure out which cards are good or bad, or, you know, find a stream and follow them for, you know, a couple dozen hours, and then maybe you'll figure it out. So she and I are working on a podcast right now called One Eye Cheat, and the goal of it, it's just a streamlined podcast focused specifically on getting people up to speed on Hearthstone from the first time they open the app. So I'm really excited. We're working on that now and banking a few episodes, so we're going to be up on iTunes soon. You can reach me with questions, or if you want to, you know, submit anything for the show, oneeyecheat@gmail.com.
So is the name One Eye Cheat at all a reference to Homestar Runners, The Cheat?
It's actually a reference to the card, the One Eye Cheat. However, I am familiar with The Cheat, and maybe I should work him into the logo, actually.
I know there's a card called One Eye Cheat, but it's actually immediately what I thought of was The Cheat. I think because someone was talking about Homestar Runner on my Twitter feed, like, right before we started talking about it. So do you particularly like the One Eye Cheat card, or why are you, why that name?
I picked that one specifically just, partially because it was a GVG card. It was contemporary to, you know, when I wanted to start talking about the game. Also, it's just kind of a fun card with flair, and it might not be entirely practical. I think it's one of those things that really exemplifies the synergies that are working in Hearthstone and the kind of tricks that you can do. Plus I like pirates.
Yeah, I do too. Actually, I'd never seen the gold version of this card. I just looked at it at Hearthstone. It's awesome. He's got like, I think he has a gem in his eye or something, because it's glowing, yeah. And there's like wind or something coming off of him. It's like Pirate King. It's awesome.
Open two gold ones, so
two gold ones?
I don't really run them, but two one-eyed cheats don't belong in any deck, but I do have two gold one-eyed cheats.
Hey, well, the universe knew that you'd be naming your podcast after it, so I wanted to give you the thumbs up that it likes your idea.
Right.
All right, so if people want to find out more about this, you mentioned the email, oneeyedcheat@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Are you on Twitter or Twitch or anything else that people can follow?
We are starting up Arena Runs on Twitch. We've only done one stream so far, but we're going to be doing some more going forward. Essentially, she has done zero Arena, so her first two Arena games right now are on Twitch.
Okay, awesome. Under One Eye Cheat. So we'll put links to that in the show notes as well. So how soon are you thinking the podcast is going to be up? Just for those listeners that can't wait, because this sounds like a really cool idea. I think helping people get into the new starting experience is awesome.
I'm hoping to have it up within next 2 weeks or so, the premiere episode, and then releasing on a weekly basis after that. And it's gonna be a bit of a slog through the middle, because after the first few introductory episodes, we're gonna be reviewing all of the cards. Period.
That's going to be a long episode. Let me tell you from personal experience, that's going to be a long episode.
We're breaking it up by class. We're breaking it up by mana cost. So we have some ways to work around it. It is kind of daunting. But, I mean, if you're really trying to teach someone Hearthstone from the ground up, I think, you know, each card warrants at least a little bit of discussion.
You can learn a lot just by talking about a card. Oh, man. Okay, man. Well, that is definitely going into my subscription feed, because I love full card reviews like that. That is going to be so fun.
I love them too, so I decided to do them for the next several months, I guess.
Good man. All right, so of course, once it goes up, we'll start putting links in the show notes. So even if you kind of forget about it, we'll make sure to remind you once the show goes up so you can check it out. And hopefully we can have you back on here, Dan. Done with your 10 years of talking card reviews, you come back on here when you have time.
Yeah, I'll come and I'll, you know, shave off the beard that I've grown in isolation over the past several years, and we'll go to it.
And you'll have dressed up as a goblin pirate and pulled out one of your own eyes and stuff. You've just gotten completely mad.
I've already done that. So.
Well, that explains a lot. Now we're all mad here. To a one-eyed crazy man in Hearthstone. Now I feel even worse. So, Dan, congratulations again on winning and being the Happy Hearthstone deck champion right now.
It feels fantastic.
I'll try to do your deck proud. As always, I'll build the deck as best I can, and I'll work with you to make sure you approve of the deck. Like, I sent this deck list to Adam to make sure he was okay with it. He's a little sad Coghammer didn't make the cut, but everything else is good. So I'll work with you to make sure. And also, If you guys have suggestions, the listeners, like Zorin did about, hey, maybe make Scott the permanent co-host and have guest battle against him, let us know what you want. We're very serious. I'm happy to change up the format, whatever you guys like, whatever works best. So just let us know what you think. So, Dan, thanks again for coming on the show. It's great having you.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
And thanks again to everyone else for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having just a little bit of fun with us. We'll see you next time.